you're ready.
From the STEM Global Action Studios in New Orleans, this is the Let's Talk STEM with SGA's Dr. Calvin Mackey podcast. STEM Global Action is a national leader in creating STEM-based learning activities and delivering them virtually and in communities around the globe to students grades K through 12.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Let's Talk STEM with Dr. Calvin Mackey. I'm Ken Sain, your moderator. Today's episode is STEM and the Fourth Industrial Revolution, where we'll discuss the current state of STEM in America, particularly the role of STEM-related careers in the post-pandemic economic recovery. But before we get started, let's say hello to our host, the President and CEO of STEM Global Action, Dr. Calvin Mackey. Hello, Dr. Mackey.
Hello, Ken. It's great to be here today.
Great. And our guest today is Dr. Brian Williams, clinical professor and director of the CREM Center for Urban Educational Excellence at Georgia State University. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Williams.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Dr. Williams is an award-winning science educator, scholar, as well as a creative who has been infecting people with his passion for science for more than 25 years. We're so glad to have him join us today. So to get us started, as America prepares for this post-pandemic economy, it's important that we all must be prepared for what Dr. Mackey calls the fourth industrial revolution. Dr. Mackey, tell us about this fourth revolution and what were the first three?
First and foremost, I'd like to say thank you to Dr. Williams for joining me today on his podcast. You know, Dr. Williams, you and I have been having these conversations since our graduate school days at Georgia Tech. So I'm just happy that we can once again engage. And as Ken would say, pontificate on these issues, you know, but you hear a lot of talk about the fourth industrial revolution. And there's been, you know, three revolutions, industrial revolutions that have ushered us into today. And the first industrial revolution, what history speaks about, is the invention of water and steam, when it brought forth the railroads that allowed this country to become the industrial hub that it is. And it really started with the slave and cotton, right? They brought over the Chinese to build the railroads because they were able to create the railroads because of this industrial revolution with steam and water. But eventually, the next industrial revolution in about the 1920s was electricity and assembly lines. That allowed Henry Ford to build Detroit and create these assembly lines with electricity and build these cars and then ship them all over the country using trains. And then the third revolution, industrial revolution, is like the late 60s, early 70s, that transformed business in our life. And many people call it, you know, the beginning of the digital age, a computerization. When we start building, IBM started building computers and people start being displaced by desktop computers and things like that. But the fourth industrial revolution is a blurring of the line of many things. Some people call it like the Internet of Things, but it's talking about the blurring of the lines of the physical, the digital, and the biological world, like advances in artificial intelligence, robotics, the Internet of Things. And the Internet of Things is like how devices talk to each other, 3D printing, genetic engineering, quantum computing. I mean, it even have us questioning what does it mean to be human? And more importantly, have us questioning what is the future of work and what is the future of the economy and the future of community. So that's why we think that this topic is very important to discuss today.
With this fourth industrial revolution, so it seems that STEM skills are even more important than ever, and that's where Dr. Williams comes in. So Dr. Williams, can you tell us, you know, we all know that there are inequities in education, particularly in STEM-related education. So how do you intersect these things, science and STEM and education, particularly for young people? How important is it that communities of color understand the importance of this?
And I think, you know, to kind of harken back to what, you know, Calvin and Dr. Mackey was just talking about, you know, with each of those revolutions, people have been involved, and in certain sectors, in certain ways, people have been left out. And I think that's the critical piece there is even when we're talking about public education and STEM, who's at the table and who's being left out. And what we're seeing right now with regards to science and STEM education is large groups of people just being left out of the conversation. They don't see themselves in the curriculum, and they don't necessarily see public education as actually serving their interests. And so many of them are checking out of the public educational system. They're leaving the educational system behind. And what this is going to have, what this means is for their future, they will not be armed. They will not be prepared to take advantage of some of the things that are coming down the pipe for them in terms of these different revolutions or this new revolution that Calvin's kind of alluding to.
With this sense of AI, can you tell us, you know, we keep hearing the phrase, what exactly is this and how does it have an impact on our daily lives and how should we be prepared to engage in it?
You know, artificial intelligence is just what it sounds like, right? It's a simulation of human intelligence through processes with machines. And that's why the Internet of Things is so important, because when these machines can talk to each other, then it creates the possibility that they can mimic human intelligence. So, you know, I have a saying that said either we're training ourselves from the neck up or we're training ourselves from the neck down. Well, if we're training ourselves from the neck down, the competition of the future will be the automatic machine. And any labor that competes with slave labor must suffer the consequences of that competition. We cannot beat the automatic machine. So in the future, not only are we talking about artificial intelligence and having machines learn, right? I mean, machines, it's almost like this, right? You get on the internet and you do a couple of searches, then you come back the next day and the computer almost tell you about yourself. Well, that's an algorithm with artificial intelligence, where people are collecting big data and learning, the machine is learning about you, and the machine is now able to respond to you without you even sensing that you're being tracked. So artificial intelligence is almost impacting every aspect of our lives, and we just don't even realize it. But from, especially with your cell phone, especially with every digital device that you use, data is being collected. So we can kind of build a profile, not only of you, but build a profile of human behavior so that companies, institutions can almost have a predictive analytics, right? They can predict behaviors and actions of what's going to happen next.
So Dr. Williams, as an educator, help me demystify this sense of young people are very good end users of technology, including AI, but at the same time are not likely to get involved in actually understanding how things work and pursuing careers in science. So just tell us a little bit about how you came to love science and how important it is for all young people of color to understand the benefits of STEM education, and then particularly the role of liberal arts and humanities as we enter this fourth industrial revolution.
I look back on my past with regards to science and mathematics and STEM. You know, I was never thought of myself as a really strong math student. I really never thought of myself as a really strong science student. In fact, my grades probably reflected that in some ways. And in some ways, it's because of what I've talked about earlier. I didn't see myself in the curriculum. It wasn't relevant. It wasn't interesting. And so I basically checked out of it. And it wasn't until I found something that really connected me with STEM that I actually got really interested in it and began to succeed. And for me, that was I wanted to build and design roller coasters. So I know that sounds crazy, but I got hooked on engineering because I went to an amusement park and I rode a roller coaster and decided for the rest of my life what I wanted to do was build and design roller coasters. And that was something that was important to me. And so therefore, science became important to me. And I think that connects back to your other question, right? Is I think one of the things that we've missed is that everybody that gets involved in science and gets involved in engineering is not doing it for the exact same reasons. There are people that are going to be interested in science and engineering because they're interested in farming. They're interested in art. They're interested in politics. I mean, there are lots of different reasons to engage. And I think one of the things that we've done is we've narrowed our focus with regards to who should be doing science to people who are going to become traditional scientists, engineers, and mathematicians. And so we need to, in some ways, broaden our perspective. We need to widen that tent and allow more people into this tent of science, engineering, and mathematics. And I think when, you know, we're beginning to talk about what's going on in the public educational system, you know, your thing around, you know, people are not engaging, our young people are not engaging. I would probably add an asterisk to that. And I'd say some of our young people are not engaging because we have public schools that are making sure that some kids have access to this type of this content, that some kids have access to this type of learning. And then we have other areas where those kids don't get it at all because we're saying, well, you know, reading, writing, and arithmetic needs to be our focus. We can't talk about computer science. We can't talk about engineering and design thinking. And those kids down the road are going to be the ones who are going to be left out or who, like Calvin said, are going to be the ones who are building the railroad. They're going to be the ones who are working in the factories. And when the factories shut down, they're going to be the ones who are going to be out of work. I mean, so what I'd like for us to think more deeply about are, one, how can we broaden the way that we think about who should be involved in science and engineering and the purposes of teaching people science, engineering, and mathematics? We're right now sitting within a pandemic where people don't understand how viruses and disease work. And as a result of that, we have been struggling to get people to actually take this thing seriously and to fight back against it. And that's a failure of our public education system, and it's a failure of our of science and STEM education specifically. So that's just one example of ways that we could actually be attacking this thing differently.
And Dr. Williams, you know, at STEM Global Action, through our affiliate STEM NOLA, we've engaged over 70,000 young people and 17,000 families right in the community. But our fundamental belief is that STEM education, STEM engagement should be culturally and environmentally relevant. When you boil STEM down to just whether or not somebody gonna become a scientist or engineer, that's when we begin to cut people out, like you mentioned, right? If I'm growing up on a farm, I should be learning about agritech. I should be learning about aqueducts and water and how does this relate to my life? And over the years, in history, it is shown that's how people got into science and technology, through the engagement and the involvement right there in their community. So I believe if we start at the schoolhouse door, we are already behind in terms of getting our kids engaged in this apparatus called STEM.
And can I add just to that, Calvin, is to acknowledge, let's begin to acknowledge the science, the mathematics, the engineering that exist in our communities already. You know, there's a lot of our kids are these families. If you're growing up in an agricultural community, best believe there's some heritage knowledge connected to STEM that's been in that community for a very long time. How do we acknowledge and build on that? And I'm bringing that up because I think that so often we dismiss the brilliance and genius that exist in some communities that's connected to STEM. And as a result, we push people away. We make people feel like, well, in order to be a part of this, you've got to give up who you are. And I remember you telling me a long time ago, Calvin, about your father. You know, Calvin, you were in my dissertation study, and you told me about your father and that your father, as a roofer, could take two measurements on a roof and tell you exactly how many shingles he needed to fix that roof. I mean, mathematics embedded in your heritage and in your community. And sometimes we overlook that. And I think it's very important that we begin to acknowledge that part of who our children are and their families and their communities.
So let's talk a little bit about how we take, you know, what you just talked about, Dr. Williams, those inherent assets that we have in our communities, and actually turn those into specific skills that can be used in this world of AI. So, you know, just between the two of you, let's talk about some of the specific careers that are available in AI and then the skills that are required to do those. And I'd be particularly interested in learning more about careers that people can do that don't necessarily require a college degree.
You know, I'm trying to think back. Recently, they had something on Netflix, and it was about culture. They was talking about the beatbox, and they was talking about the voice machine. They was talking about how the voice machine has transformed music. And I forget the singer that they said, you know, destroyed music because he began to use this voice box. But all of that is technology that our kids are in on a daily basis. I was in a supermarket recently and I bought my groceries. And when I bought my groceries, I should say when I made my groceries, because in New Orleans we make groceries. But when I made my groceries, and the young lady, she rung up all of my prices. At the bottom, they took $45 off. And I looked at the screen, I looked at my sons, and I said, sons, that's big data. And everybody in the store was looking at me like, what is he talking about? Big data. And I said, my data, what I'm buying is so important to the supermarket that they're willing to give me $47 back just so they can understand the what, the when, and the how I'm buying. So they can make predictions about when to stock their shelves. And everybody was looking, right? And I said, if they're willing to give me $47 back for my data, how much do you think that data is worth to them? So when we start talking about careers in artificial intelligence, we're talking about things like not only coding and machine learning, but we're talking about predictive analytics. We're talking about data science. We're talking about big data. And all of that is grounded in mathematics. But we're also talking about sensors, right? Because when you go to the supermarket and you take your can or you take your milk and you roll it across the thing, that's a sensor that, read the numbers. So you're talking about sensors. And if it's a sensor, you got to talk about the electrical engineering in the sensors. You got to talk about the mechanical engineering in the sensors. You got to talk about the materials, right? What type of materials that a chemical engineer had to create or a material scientist had to create such that that light can shine through that material such that it can properly scan that tag on the can such that that data can be written. So in essence, Ken, what we're saying is that everything that we do is a part of this world called the fourth industrial revolution and artificial intelligence. So there's a pathway, right, for everybody. And I keep telling parents, and Dr. William and I have talked about this, about cybersecurity. I mean, cybersecurity is everything. I think there should be a thread of cybersecurity in our schools, because I don't care if you're in the politics, history, language, arts, humanities, geography, whatever it is, that is a part of this world that's called cybersecurity. When we are trying to make sure that all of our devices and our internet of things that talk to each other are protected from people trying to gain unlawful and unethical access.
So it seems like there are definitely some careers that people can pursue, but we just have to make sure that young people have the skills, the knowledge, the training, things like that. So I'm curious. So Dr. Williams, what are some questions? What are some things that parents should look out for, or when they enroll their kids in this new school year, how do they make sure that their kids are learning these types of things?
Yeah, I think our parents need to be very involved in their children's education. I think gone are the days when we can just say, oh, I trust that the school is going to do right by my kids. We have to understand things like tracking in our schools. So the system of tracking in our schools, it says once a child gets on the college preparatory track, you know, then we're going to prepare them for college versus you getting on the vocational track, which is going to prepare you for this. We need to, our parents need to understand, what does it mean for our children to enroll in these different tracks, and what does it mean for their future? What does it mean for them to take algebra in the seventh grade versus waiting till ninth grade? So we need to understand the systems that are embedded in education. I think we also need to do a really great job of helping our kids to understand that we as parents think that schooling is very important. We think that math and science are very important. You know, I hear people talk about, you know, sitting down with your kids and doing their homework and homework help and things like that. And I think that's important. But I think probably what's just as important, and probably more important, is for parents to impress upon their children that they value education, that they believe that their children are capable of being successful in school, and that they're willing to advocate and make sure that their children get the best education possible. And so that means that our parents just have to be involved in a very, very different way in their children's education. And I think finally, I think a lot of our parents, this is some of the work I did when I was in Charlotte. Some of our parents also are really anxious about science and mathematics and engineering. They don't know about it. They're scared of it. So we have to help our parents also to deal with their own anxiety when it comes to STEM and STEM learning. So one of the things I do, I do a lot of STEM workshops here in Atlanta. I always ask for our parents to be actively engaged in the workshop. And I know STEM NOLA does the exact same thing, because we have to help our parents also to learn this stuff so they can help their children.
You have your science show on YouTube with your own kids. I started STEM NOLA in my garage with my own kids. And it is because Dr. William and I, we've been knowing each other 30 years. And for 30 years, we've been saying it is very important for parents to be engaged. But both of us understood that sometimes the parents just don't know. And both of us have been working to create spaces, safe spaces, accessible spaces where parents can tune in. They can come to stemglobalaction.com. They can come to stemnola.com. They can go to Dr. Williams' site And you and your kid can sit there and watch these experiments from men and women who look like them, who they can touch, feel, know, because it's just more, it's more than just getting engaged, right? Not only are they engaged in the STEM when they're interacting, but they can see someone and listen to someone as a reflection of them. And that makes all the difference in the world.
That's fantastic. So last question for both of you all. Just tell me, how excited are you all excited for the future of young people in STEM education and what the world brings to young people?
I'm very excited. I think that young people oftentimes are the solution to some of the biggest challenges that we're facing. So full of potential if we give them the opportunity to realize it. I'm concerned about the world that we're leaving them to inherit. And I think that we, as this generation and the generation before me, you know, our goal is to kind of lay a pathway for them. I'm excited about this.
All right, Dr. Mackey, your last words.
Again, I'm very excited, but I am so concerned. Just like Dr. Williams said, we don't believe that there are kids. We don't believe that there are at-risk kids. We believe that only that there's kids in at-risk environments. So we have to be concerned about the environments that we're allowing to exist, and we're allowing our kids to operate within. And that's why we get up every day at STEM Global Action and at STEM NOLA and make sure that we are fighting those systems and fighting those environments to make sure that when our kids show up, they're not at risk. Our kids, you know, they got three things they have to develop. They have to develop their skill sets, they have to develop their assets, but more importantly, they have to develop their mindsets. If the adults will get out of their way, definitely they need the skill sets, and that, you know, too much folks are just put on workforce development. They need assets. That's the people in their lives, the mentors, the parents. But more importantly, they need the right mindset. If we give our kids the right mindset in the 21st century, the world is their oyster, and they can create whatever their mind conceive. And those are the type of skills that we're trying to give them, and those are, that's the type of mindset that we're trying to plant within them.
Thank you for joining us. That's our episode for the day.
You've been listening to a STEM Global Action podcast. Through our STEM-based programming, we put students on a path towards quality jobs in science, technology, engineering, and math. Visit us at www.stemglobalaction.com. Until next time, let's keep talking STEM.